Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. This is the Thursday edition coming up on today's program. Sadly, more violence in Chicago. It just keeps escalating. Donald Trump's weighed in with a few comments about that. A college bans a pro-Palestinian group. That's pretty unusual. We'll have the details about that story. And also, President Trump is going to publish a weekly list of crimes committed by undocumented immigrants in sanctuary cities. Interesting. That and more. This edition, Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, live link there at thetrumpet.com as well. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, please do that at kpcgfm, and send any emails you might have, comments at kpcg.fm. I'm Dwight Falk and Grant Turgeon here today with me. It's a cold day today, Grant, here in central Oklahoma. It's freezing out there.
Yeah, every time I feel like I'm right on time for work, I come outside and out of nowhere my windshield froze overnight so to where I can't even see.
It was a little unexpected because we've had pretty warm weather.
Yeah.
What was the other day? It was 70 degrees, and then today, I think it's going to be about 40 or 50, but the wind chill is down in the teens and the 20s. You get that cold northerly wind here in Oklahoma. And that's one of the things that really separates, I think, Oklahoma from some other places as far as winters go. They're not bad here necessarily, but up north it's colder, but usually not as much wind, at least where I was from. Some places I'm sure it is, but down here you get that wind going and it just cuts through you, dries out your hands. There's nothing good about it. Nothing good happening.
Yeah, it's probably a worse version of winter down here because at least if everything is still, you can tolerate it a bit more, it seems like.
Yeah, it gets cold, but the wind is what really gets you. Actually, that reminds me, I didn't even plan on talking about this, but since we're talking about winter, this is a funny email that, text that I got yesterday from somebody telling me about, it was a chart they found, and it says how different snowfall amounts affect different regions of the country. And so they have three columns, East Coast, the South, and then Wisconsin, which is where I'm from, why they sent it to me. They said if they get flurries to 1 inch, the East Coast commute times increase by 20 to 50%. The South has mild panic and a general sense of doom. Wisconsin, you start to think about wearing long pants, maybe.
Maybe.
Pretty accurate. I won't do all of them. It's a pretty long list. Down a little further, they say 4 to 8 inches. East Coast, air traffic diverted, flights delayed or canceled. In the South, stores emptied of bottled water, bread, and other emergency provisions. And in Wisconsin, you have to brush the snow off the grill before cooking out or tailgating before the Packers. And the last one will go all the way down to the bottom. If you get 36 or more inches in the East Coast, there's a total travel ban enforced. In the South, nothing left alive except for small burrowing mammals. And in Wisconsin, you finally get a snow day. Unless you have to work, and then you still have to go to work. So it was really funny. There's a lot of different ones. But, you know, one of the things up there is that people have plows on their own trucks. So it's
really?
You could kind of plow your own way if you have to, I guess. People usually use it for their driveways or for sometimes they'll get somebody will pay them to come in and plow out a parking lot or something like that. That happened. I had an apartment that I lived in. We all parked outside, and they would pay somebody to come plow the thing. I was gone to work. It was a Sunday. I was gone. And I came home, and I parked my car, and I went about business as normal. Violent knocking on my door. Somebody outraged. And I was napping at the time because I come home from work. So I go out there, I open the door. It's my neighbor from across the hall. We don't have much of a rapport. We see each other occasionally. And he's yelling and screaming about something. I didn't know what he was talking about. He was accusing me of parking in his spot so it couldn't get plowed and then moving to my spot. I said, hey, man, I was gone all day. I don't know what you're talking about. And he didn't believe me. He thought I was trying to sabotage his parking spot, and I didn't do it.
That's so funny.
So wherever you are, buddy, I'm telling you the truth. I didn't take your spot.
He's quick to wrath there.
Very, very important winter memories from back north.
So they just hook a plow onto the grill of the truck?
They've got, well, it's a kit, basically, I think, that hooks to the front. And okay. It's got, like, the hydraulics and such, so you can move it up and down. And
that's incredible.
Yeah.
Didn't know that existed.
Yeah, it's a whole kit that you can get for your truck. Don't need it down here.
No.
No reason for that.
No wonder I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's not as common. And you can even put them on your lawnmowers. I've seen people do that. They plow their driveway with their lawnmower. So, all kinds of things. Snowblowers, all kinds of things you don't need down here. If you're a big tennis fan, you're probably excited about the Australian Open, which is going on. The final is coming up for the ladies. It's an all-Williams final as Serena faces Sister Venus. They've been playing tennis for a long, long time. And they've met before in the finals. I forget how many times. I think about 8.
Wow.
And so kind of weird. You're playing your sister in in the final. And so they've been just tremendous tennis players.
The consensus is that Venus is a little bit better, if anyone, right?
Let's see.
If I have that correct.
Which one's the younger one? Serena's the younger one, right?
Yeah, whoever the younger, stronger one is.
She's a little better.
Serena, yeah.
I think so. She's won more. Mm-hmm. But they've both been great. So they're going to play again in the finals. And they have a combined age of 71.
Wow.
Venus is 36. And yeah, Serena's younger, 35. So here's a little trivia for you that you can stash away. The final will be the oldest women's Grand Slam final in the Open era. So if you were watching it with your friends, you might just throw that out casually. You know what's interesting, guys? This is the oldest final. So tennis is one of those sports. It's kind of like, a lot of sports, but where usually they peak really young, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20. And then by the time you're 36, 35, it's like you're ancient. But they're still plugging along.
Yeah, that's an exhausting sport. You have to be able to move laterally extremely quickly. The older you get, the easier it could be to tear a ligament or something moving side to side so fast. So it's really impressive to see people that are still in such good shape and have disciplined themselves for so long that they can prolong their careers like that.
Yeah, there was, Andre Agassi was one of those guys that he kind of had that career resurgence later. He was good young. When he had the real long hair. Then he came back later when he was bald and he played better. But he was in his 30s and he was still playing well. And then I was thinking of the Olympics this year. There was that gymnast, international. I don't know where she was from. Not the U.S., but I think she was about 40. And she was still doing gymnastics at a high Olympic level. So some people just keep going.
That's interesting. It's also funny how we always say people that are getting toward 40 are really old in sports. And then any listener who's older than that's like, they have no idea what's going on here.
In the sport of life, you get to extend that a little bit. But yeah, another sports story. This one's pretty interesting, too. You might check it out. It's from the New York Post. It says the inside story of a basketball teen so tall he doesn't look real. His name is his international name. So if I get this right, Robert Bobrovsky, something close to that. He could be the tallest NBA player of all time if he ever makes it that far. I don't know they don't make it. Because he's so tall, he has a hard time moving. They have a video of him on the New York Post, and he just, you know, it looks odd because he's so 7'7". Mm. And so if you want to think about that in terms of other players, I think Shaquille O'Neal is about 7'1", 7'2". The difference with him, though, huge as far as strength and very agile. Sean Bradley was about 7'5", 7'6".
Mm-hmm.
Tall guy, made it to the NBA.
Right.
Just got dunked on a lot, occasionally blocked a shot.
Poor guy.
But this guy is even taller, and he's only 16, so he might get taller still.
It's dangerous to be so young and that big already, yeah. Whenever your body's still developing and you could easily get hurt.
And it's interesting because if you look at the video of this fella, he doesn't look right. Mm. There's a lot of tall guys like that and they obviously look kind of gangly because they're so long. But like even his neck is really long. So it's, you know, hopefully he can not get hurt, like you said. He's playing at an Ohio high school right now, and he's not playing a lot. They're just literally trying to get him up and down the court comfortably.
Mm.
And then hoping next year he can develop some strength. Because he only weighs, what does he weigh, like 180 pounds or something like that?
Wow.
7'7". So, I mean, he's a real smart guy. He is known as Big Rob, no surprise. Usually they call the real tall guys tiny, but in this case he's Big Rob. He's a 4.3 grade point average while attending Grand River Academy in Ohio, and he speaks 4 languages, Romanian, English, Hungarian, and Italian fluently.
Is it 4.0 perfect? How did he get a 4.3?
Yeah, and when I went to school, 4.0 was all you could get, but I have seen people getting these higher ones. So I don't know.
Maybe five is the max now.
I don't know how that works. If they're in some sort of like an honors program or something.
Yeah. But
anyway, real smart guy, speaks four languages, which is amazing. And of course, when you're 7'7", you got to try to play basketball. I mean, you might as well. So anyway, there's a video of him, and it's a little strange just to see those really tall guys moving because everything looks just different. So if he can get a little stronger, they're hoping, put a little muscle on, then they want to use him. And you know, even if he's not real skilled, 7'7", just stand under the rim.
Mm-hmm.
Just put your arms up. Nobody's going to make any baskets.
Well, yeah, that could easily translate to a college team at the least. Even if he doesn't go professional, any college team could use a guy that tall who could just intimidate drivers.
Just to warm up. You know, you warm up, you look at the other team down there, and you're like, what is going on?
How's Goliath on that team?
He's huge. We had a kid on our team when I was playing in school that was nothing like this, but he was a big guy. He was, you know, 6'6", 6'7", something like that. And they really worked with him, tried to get him to – he just didn't have it, the coordination. That's what makes the NBA guys rare, the college guys, is that they have that size and they're coordinated.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of times that those two don't go together.
Most of them are coordinated. Well, I will say I've seen a few who tend to end up on Shaqt and a Fool quite a few times with some crazy plays. But even still, they are doing pretty well for themselves.
Yeah, if you can make it to that level, you're definitely a good athlete on some level. Well, there's been a lot of violence in Chicago, of course, over the last few years especially. And this is just, I don't know, ironic, I guess. A headline from AOL.com, 6 shot during vigil for gunshot victim in Chicago. So a 12-year-old girl was among 6 people shot on Wednesday evening during a vigil in Chicago for a gunshot victim, local media said. That was a day after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened federal intervention to tackle gun violence in the city. He said if they can't get under control, he's going to send the feds in. So I'm not sure exactly what that means, but some sort of a... He wants them to get it under control. The shooting occurred at a restaurant in the Greater Grand Crossing neighborhood, for those familiar with that area, where people were gathered to mourn the death of Jemiah Fields, who was 20, who was shot and killed on Monday, the Chicago Tribune reported. A gang found out about the memorial event on social media and targeted someone who was attending and then ended up shooting 6 people. So... when they talk about these things in Chicago, of course, there's a lot of layers to the problem, I suppose. They talk about guns a lot, but ultimately, your problem is gangs and drugs, I would imagine. And then, of course, it all gets back down to the breakdown of the family. So if you can't get rid of the drugs and you can't get rid of the gangs, you're never going to solve the problem. And it seems like they gave up on the war on drugs a long time ago, and I haven't heard a lot about trying to stop gangs either. Like... in some sort of serious fashion, they might occasionally have let's all get along sort of whatever it might be, but I haven't seen any real tough action. And then with President Obama too, I mean, he was letting some of the drug offenders out of prison, even though they were quote unquote lower level, and they're upset about there being such a high rate of minorities in prison, but a lot of them are in there because they're gang problems, drugs, etc.
And it's really upsetting when people would actually go to a memorial of someone who was shot dead and shoot up the memorial as well. Where's the outrage about this? In the whole country, we're not seeing people protesting and rioting in the streets about these things. It's far more egregious than any police shooting, and we're not talking about it at all.
Yeah, we have a story a little bit later about some of these protests, and I guess one of the catchphrases against President Trump is, he will not divide us. Okay, well, what about having a protest about gangs? Go into the gang neighborhood and protest and say, you're not going to divide us. Nobody does that. Maybe they should. Maybe they shouldn't. it's a bad place to go, but it's easy to protest something when you feel personally safe.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some things that should be protested against and stopped, and the gangs are certainly one of them.
That should be a pretty big indicator of where the real threat is. People feel comfortable enough to protest police action while police are there surrounding them. They would not do that if gang members with guns were surrounding them. So what's the real threat? Who is the real danger in these communities?
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, there's not a lot of protests against the gangs. Sometimes you'll see a lot of times it's the moms, because a lot of the dads aren't around, but the moms will have a march, you know, for peace or something. And it's in their community, and people know them, so I guess it's a little safer. And it's a noble attempt, but at some point, the words don't mean anything. You actually have to stop the crime, and I don't know how you do that without some sort of force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's really something sick going on in people's minds to shoot up a memorial like that, too. I mean, there's something really wrong there. That was just really disturbing when you were reading that. That's just something like that should never happen. I mean, if any time to pause with the shooting, with the warfare, just at least let someone mourn for the dead and then continue later.
Yeah, you think about living in a situation like that where you face those sorts of struggles. That the fact that you know somebody that died, got killed, and then you go to the memorial and you get shot at, it would be a very scary life. Mm. You wouldn't have a lot of peace because of the threat of violence all the time.
Yeah, there's never a break. It just never stops, and yet we turn a blind eye to it for the most part. They're basically statistics. They're numbers that we see after the weekend. It's all totaled up. We see it on Monday morning, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and it happens so frequently that it doesn't always make the top of the headlines anymore. So, unless it's something extreme like that. CNN.com has this write-up, the Doomsday Clock. You might have heard of that over the years. There was a Key of David program on that a while ago. It says, Doomsday Clock, why humanity might be edging closer to its end. Chicago-based group of scientists tasked with assessing how close the apocalypse is will on Thursday today announce if the events of 2016 have moved the hands of the Doomsday Clock. They think that it will. They're assuming that they're going to move it 2 minutes to midnight. It currently stands, I think, at 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So we're 1 minute closer to the end of it all.
Yeah, apparently that's the closest that it's been since the 50s. We have never been this close to annihilation. I saw some of the factors that they take into consideration when they're trying to figure out where the clock should be. And obviously, they're talking about nuclear annihilation and tensions between the U.S. and Russia like we haven't seen since the Cold War. And then you know what their other factor is climate change. Oh. They throw that in there as if it's an equal threat to all of us.
Yes, that's the climate change. Yeah, the reasons exactly here, verbatim, they say a rise in strident nationalism, President Donald Trump's comments on nuclear arms and climate issues.
there it is.
A darkening global security landscape that is colored by increasingly sophisticated technology and a growing disregard for scientific expertise. So those are some interesting reasons. I think some of them might be good. Some of them are not good or not legitimate, I don't think. Donald Trump's comments on nuclear arms. How about President Obama letting Iran have a path to the nuclear weapons? Oh, I know it supposedly got rid of them. I understand that, but clearly that's not the case. That they should have moved that one last year.
Yeah.
A lot closer, like a second to midnight.
Well, remember, this is a group of scientists from Chicago, his hometown, so they probably don't want to besmirch his good name.
Could be. This is the closest it's been since 1953, after the first hydrogen bomb tests in the U.S. and then the Soviet Union. So take that for what it's worth. And like this article points out, when it hits midnight, they say it's going to be the end of mankind. However, if you're familiar with Bible prophecy, that's not the case. Christ said he would return before that happened.
We'll probably hit about a second before midnight, and then he'll return and save us from our own destruction.
Our own, destroying ourselves. So anyway, it's always interesting when they kind of start moving that thing around a little bit, and it's closest since 1953. So take that for what it's worth. Here's a good idea, I think. American Airlines says it's dropping seat back screens from its in-flight entertainment on its 100 new Boeing 737 MAX jets because most passengers carry their own screens. I thought that for a while because sometimes you'll take a flight and they still have the screens there and nobody's paying attention to them because everybody's got their own device.
That's pretty strange to me because they charge for Wi-Fi on most planes. And so unless you have movies downloaded on your iPad or your phone in advance, you're paying $10 or something like that to be able to watch on the plane. It's free for the most part. A lot of the in-flight entertainment is free, although some of those things you have to pay for as well.
Yeah, the screens will still be on some of the older planes, and what they are doing, like you mentioned, on these new Boeing 737s are Wi-Fi, so people can hook into the Wi-Fi. And but like you say, it's good to I guess if you want to watch something, download it ahead of time and have it ready to go. Last time I took a long flight, which was about 6 hours, I guess, they had the screens there, and I caught up on shows that I've never watched before or since.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitcoms. I'm like, what is this show? You know, just bored. So you end up watching it. And I thought, yeah, I'll never watch this again, you know. But they do have a variety of things on there. And what's difficult is if you travel with your kids, which I was, and then the guy sitting next to your kids watching an R-rated movie,
yeah.
And you're trying to say, hey, don't pay attention to that. That can be tricky.
That's really difficult, yeah. And it seems like that happens quite a lot. I see that on a lot of planes where poor kids are sitting next to the guy who's watching the worst movie available on there.
Yeah, so, they had old video games on the flight we were on. You know, you could watch a show or you could play a game or something. Mm-hmm. And it was actually kind of fun. I forget, one of the like golf games or something. I was amazed about how entertained I was. But then again, you know, when you're 5 hours into a flight, just about anything to keep your mind sane at that point is worth looking at, I guess. So I imagine on the internationals they'll still have the screens, but it is changing. Remember when they used to have phones?
Mm-hmm.
On the back of the plane, right. You could call somebody. What else have they had? Well, you could used to be able to rent like a movie from the airport, like a player, and take it with you and then drop it off of the other one. So, But now with smartphones and so forth, I just don't need to do that anymore.
That's too bad. I don't really like that change too much because I don't have any sort of archive of entertainment on my phone. I don't even have a laptop, so the screens were pretty nice for me from time to time to be able to watch those on the plane.
Yep, you can always, I guess, take a book, the old-fashioned book.
I do that a lot. Thankfully, if you're having to pay for things for screen entertainment anyway, the book usually becomes the better option.
I'm probably the only guy. I will actually take the magazine out still
and
flip through it.
Those are pretty good magazines, actually.
They have some good articles.
Like the American magazine.
Yeah.
They have some really well-written articles in there, and yet I don't see many people looking at them.
No. You browse the old Sky Mall. See what you will
make a few purchases usually.
Yeah, they always have some things on there. Well, here's something that will not be good for you, but I thought I'd mention it anyway just to tempt you. Twinkies flavored ice creams coming to a store near you.
Wow.
Just when you thought there weren't, you know, you couldn't have any more flavors of ice cream, they've got some new ones. They're trying to combine it, which is funny. We, for some reason, yesterday we were actually talking about, my kids were talking about bubblegum ice cream. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they make that anymore. Not where it's just flavored like bubblegum, but there's gum in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought it was just a great idea. They've never had it. And I said, no, actually, it didn't work out. I don't think it worked out well. But you'd think it would, right? Mm-hmm. You'd be like, well, I like gum and I like ice cream. Let's put them together. Well, same thing here. People would be like, well, I like Twinkies and I like ice cream, so let's put them together. I don't know if it'll work or not. Hostess fans will soon be able to get their hands on three new ice cream flavors inspired by the brand's most popular snack cakes, Twinkies and Snowballs. This doesn't sound good to me, but maybe they're targeting a younger audience. Twinkies and Snowballs flavored ice creams have been spotted in freezer case at some grocery stores in Ohio and West Virginia. So I don't know if it's going to make it nationally, but if you're in Ohio or West Virginia and you go to Risebeck's grocery, you might see it there. The Twinkies flavor starts with buttercream ice cream base, sponge cake pieces, and a vanilla frosting swirl. If chocolate is more your speed, they say, the Hostess has you covered. Additional ice cream flavors include Snowballs, the cream-filled cakes with marshmallow and coconut frosting. That's why I never like Snowballs. I don't like the coconut. And cupcake, cream-filled cake with famous squiggly line. So they're going to see if people want to buy that.
There does get to be a point where there becomes too many flavors. Have you ever been to Pops, that soda place?
I have.
Yeah, I just went there for the first time last night. It was pretty overwhelming, actually, because there are these shelves all along the perimeter of the building with different colors of soda on them. And then, obviously, there's a gigantic refrigerator full of different types of soda, too. And my friend Reese took forever to pick his soda. He just couldn't make a decision.
Too many decisions.
It's difficult. I just chose a blue colored one because it seemed to have a special allure to me that night. But he had a really hard time.
It's like Floyd Mayweather trying to pick sunglasses.
Yeah,
exactly. Got 1,000 pairs. Which one are you gonna wear today? Which soda are you gonna drink today? I actually thought about them. I've only been there maybe once or twice. It's a, for those not in the local area, it's kind of a specialty soda place, and I thought about them during earthquakes because, like you say, they have all the soda sitting there and the glass. And I thought, oh, man, I wonder if the bottles fell off. I've never heard that they have, but you know, that would not be a good cleanup job.
Right. Those soda bottles, they're all glass, and they're just sitting, they're perched on these really narrow shelves right along the edge of the building. So it's a very nice, beautiful design. Maybe they're glued down. Maybe that's that would be pretty smart.
Maybe. Yeah, it's so it's kind of a unique store, but all kinds of strange flavors and things out there they're trying to mix together. Probably all made out of the same, like, three ingredients, but as far as this Twinkie ice cream goes. But anyway, for a lot of people, they just thought, oh, that's yucky. But others thought, I'm going to try that.
Right. So. Well, I believe they probably are made of the same things. The blue soda I got last night just tasted like a regular cream soda. It was bright blue, but it tasted exactly like stuff I've had before.
What's making it blue? That's the question.
Exactly. Probably the real problem.
Probably don't want to know the answer. Here's a kind of a different one based upon what's normally happening at colleges. This is from Heat Street. Fordham University's ban on pro-Palestinian student group draws backlash from justice groups. So you'd expect there'd be some protests against them not allowing this pro-Palestinian group. But just the fact that they wouldn't allow it, I thought was pretty interesting. And the reason they're not allowing it is because they're not really pro-Palestinian. They're anti-Israel. That's what they are. It's not like they're just saying, we like the Palestinians, and we'd like to see them grow and develop. They're saying we want to destroy Israel. So it says the unofficial Students for Justice in Palestine chapter has been seeking approval from the university for over a year. This is Fordham University. They first proposed the club in November 2015 before their application was officially denied by the Dean of Students in late December. Explaining the rationale behind the ban, University Dean Keith Eldridge cited the group's political goals, including the support for the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, which he says runs counter to Fordham's mission and values. You don't see a lot of deans take that stance.
Well, maybe you have to have something to kind of mask your anti-Israel hatred, because obviously, whether people know it or not, any pro-Palestinian group is actually an anti-Israel group, because the Palestine mission is to actually annihilate Israel and take their land. So maybe they just didn't hide their intentions well enough here in this case.
Could be. The dean wrote a letter to the head of the Students for Justice in Palestine. He explained this. He said, quote, that he could not support an organization whose sole purpose is advocating political goals of a specific group and against a specific country.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. He says, there is perhaps no more complex topic than the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and it is a topic that often leads to polarization rather than dialogue. And he said the purpose of the organization, as stated in the proposed club constitution, points toward that polarization. So, and then, of course, you have people that will protest what the dean said there. But I was pretty impressed that he would stand up and take a stand like this, knowing full well there's going to be a backlash against it. But I think he has some really good points.
Yeah, well, we're in an age now where it seems like Israel is pretty excited that we have a new president, and obviously, maybe there will be less pressure put on him, or maybe he's hoping so because of how our new government has changed.
They say, well, they were speaking to this Algemeiner, the campus director for the Committee of Accuracy of the Middle East, said that he actually thought Fordham's ban was reasonable and commendable. They said SJP and its affiliates promote extreme anti-Israel propaganda, harass students and faculty members, Jewish and non-Jewish, who are known to support Israel. So they're just causing difficulties, and they finally have taken a stand and said, we're not going to recognize you as a group. So usually we see going the other way at universities, but in this case it took a stand, and good form. Takes a little bit of courage in this day and age, I think.
Yeah, maybe this could be continued out to a lot of other groups that actually sound really familiar to what that group was doing, harassing different students and teachers. Don't we see a lot of radical groups on campus doing that now? Maybe we should get rid of all of those.
Well, and their threat is, you know, if you don't allow us to do what we want, we're going to protest. And, you know, and that's kind of all they do is protest. And they're very divisive. I don't see them building anything positive. Mm. So, well, good for them. So that was an interesting one out of Fordham University. Of course, this one's happening. The actor turned art project turned protester, Shia LaBeouf, was arrested outside of New York Museum. He was arrested early Thursday after he allegedly got into an altercation with another man outside a New York City museum, where he has been chanting, "He will not divide us," in front of a live camera since Donald Trump's inauguration. It's got to be hard to do. You know how when you just say the same word over and over, or the same phrase, it gets all funny? like in your brain, like it doesn't make sense anymore. I'm amazed he can keep doing this.
I did see that video that you referenced in the show the other day where he was yelling in that man's face and sort of chest bumping him and yelling in his ear. He was roaring. He was almost foaming at the mouth. He was like, "He will not divide us."
Yeah.
And just losing his mind.
Yeah, he's I mean, right on the heels of the election, there's a lot of protesting, of course, and so he's kind of jumping into that. But he says he wants to do this for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe eight, who knows, if you know, Donald Trump stayed in for that long. But I just wonder how long he can keep it up because, well, not today, obviously, because he got arrested. But, you know, people move on. Whatever the popular protest is usually kind of dissipates mm-hmm. over time. And so I don't know if he's going to keep this up. But he pulled the scarf of an unidentified 25-year-old man outside the Museum of the Moving Image in Queens, and he scratched his face in the process. And then he pushed the man, and so anyway, he got arrested for it. So it's always interesting when somebody yells, "He will not divide us," while fighting people.
While dividing people.
He's dividing people yeah. while he's doing it. So that guy, but like you said earlier, I mean, he keeps his name in the media, and maybe that's what he's trying to do.
He's kind of a genius, actually, because this is a 4-year live stream. Who has ever thought to continuously live stream one location for 4 years? Probably nobody. He's also had ideas like a call center where he'd just be the only one at the call center taking calls from random people. And
for what purpose? Just to talk to him?
Whatever they wanted to say to him, they okay. could say. Another time he put a bag over his head and let people come into a museum to visit him because he was trying to express shame at how some of his movies turned out.
Yeah.
So he's had a lot of really interesting ideas like that. Another one was his Just Do It video, his motivational speech that now everyone uses as kind of like they make fun of him with it, but people know him. He's constantly in the headlines, even though he hasn't necessarily been in a ton of movies lately.
He did another thing where he sat, I think, in a theater, and he watched all of his movies in a
yeah.
row, which took 3 days. And then there was, a live stream on him, like his face, watching the movies.
Yeah.
And then people would come and sit next to him and do things. And
he was there the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't shower or
strange
brush his teeth or anything. He was just stinking it up in there for 3 straight days.
Well, you got time and money, I guess. You can kind of do what you want. But so anyway, he's going to be in jail today for a while anyway until he gets bailed out, I guess. And then we'll see what happens from there. But he's keeping his name in the headlines, that's for sure.
It's hard to even really get upset at that guy. He's just so quirky. I mean, technically an assault makes me upset at him. It just makes me laugh.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because he's standing there in front of this camera yelling this phrase, and then people know he's doing it, and so you have people coming up, sometimes supporting him, but sometimes just to egg him on. And I think like some of these people are trying to egg him on, or they'll come up with different signs, and then he'll attack them. It's some sort of weird performance art.
Someone came up behind him with like an animated picture of a frog, apparently Pepe the Frog. I don't really know what that is, but it really made him mad. He like snatched at the poster. It triggered him badly.
I don't know. He's operating on a whole nother level. I'm not sure which level that is, but it's somewhere else. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here at 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm. Live link here at thetrumpet.com as well. I'm Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau stopping by as well. You can follow us on Twitter at kpcgfm, and also if you'd like to email us, please send comments to comments@kpcg.fm. Kia David program's coming up in a bit. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host Stephen Fleury from Edstone, England. Make sure you listen for that. Check the archives as well in case you can't catch it live. Lots of problems going on in the Middle East and in Europe, per usual. A lot of difficulties over there in Europe with migrants that have come over from the Middle East. And there's a story today that's kind of late-breaking, pretty bad story. And this isn't going to help. This is from The Sun. Two Afghan migrants revealed as those arrested over a horrific sexual assault streamed on Facebook Live in Sweden. So, gross story. We don't need to get into it too much, but just the really horrific, horrific thing. Of course, it highlights some of the problems with some of these live streaming mm-hmm. potentials. But here you have two Afghan migrants, and they did this terrible thing in Sweden. So just more and more trouble over there in Europe with people coming from the Middle East.
Yeah, Malmo, Sweden actually is now being described as the rape capital of all of Europe. So obviously they've had their issues with the Muslim crimes or the Muslim refugees committing crimes. I saw a chart yesterday with the top ethnicities in Germany that commit crimes, and it's like the bars for all of these Muslim majority nations are way bigger. The crimes they commit are way bigger than any of the other nations or nationalities that are now in Germany.
Yeah, so it's just going to get that anger going more, I guess. They say that, you know, this went on until the police actually showed up and turned the camera off.
Wow.
So just a terrible, terrible thing hitting the headlines there. It's just going to cause more problems over there in Europe. Abraham, welcome.
Welcome. To me, yes.
To you,
thank
yeah.
you for having me on.
That's like when you say you're not going anywhere and you say to somebody, have a nice trip, and then they say to you, yeah, you too.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just have a nice fall.
Yeah. It's just a reaction. It's just, and then you realize, wait a minute, that didn't make sense. But you were welcoming me into your presence, so that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got an interesting write up here. This is a big topic here with the what is President Trump going to do with the U.S. and the U.N.? This is from U.N. Dispatch, and it talks about some new, things you might want to try. Senators propose the diplomatic equivalent of cutting off one's nose to spite the face. What are the details here?
Yes, so this article is written in response to Senators Ted Cruz and Lindsey Graham introduce legislation yesterday that could potentially cut off all U.S. funding to the United Nations. This is in response to the United Nations Security Council Resolution 2334, which was the one in which the U.S. Did not veto, which says that Israel building settlements in the West Bank or East Jerusalem is illegal, and it's the roadblock to the two-state solution. And so this legislation says that unless that a resolution is taken out, unless it's made null and void, the U.S. will not fund the United Nations until that is done.
Yeah, and in looking over the article, you know, it's interesting because when you start to dig into some of the things that the U.S. is funding for the U.N. to do, I mean, some of it's pretty important, as I'm sure you'll get into a little bit more in detail. And so when I first, you know, saw the headline, I thought, well, you know, it's probably not good, but at the same time, the U.N. does a lot of things that are pretty bad, I think. However, they do some things or are supposed to do some things that are actually pretty good. And so, like this article points out, I mean, you know, where do you draw the line on it? Because do you get rid of the whole thing and cut off the good to try to deal with the bad? It's an interesting question.
Yeah, this kind of brings into account a bigger question, that is the immediate future of the UN and its legitimacy in the world. And as you mentioned, the United Nations does a lot of things. It provides food to refugees, provides vaccines to children in Africa. It helps nations where there isn't an infrastructure, make sure planes don't run into each other. It does a lot of humanitarian efforts worldwide, including peacekeeping very volatile regions in the world. And so all of this is funded mainly by the U.S. The U.S. makes up 22%.
And they also look after the supposedly the, like, they do the nuclear checks too.
Yes, yeah,
which is a big one. I don't know if they're actually doing them, but they're supposed to.
Yeah, the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which monitors the spread of nuclear weapons, that's funded by the United Nations. So, or it's part of the United Nations system, and so the U.S. sends about $610 million a year to the United Nations. Without that, it would pretty much come to a halt. Most of their most essential activities would have to stop. With that said, the UN is also probably the least efficient organization in the world ever, just from experiences of people working with it. And there's plenty of scandals out there involving many important people in the United Nations. So it is a two-edged sword, where the United Nations has become more of a forum of anti-Israel nations, But at the same time, they do help a lot of people in the world. So I'm not sure if this is necessarily the appropriate thing to do to get the point across to United Nations. But at the same time, I think it does show that if you want peace and if you want change to come to the world, the United Nations probably isn't the solution anymore, which is scary to think about because when it was made, it was called the last hope for world peace on Earth.
Yeah, and you'd have to think, okay, well, if you want to get rid of it, which may not be a bad idea, what do you replace it with? Because, I mean, even though I think it's been hijacked by, like, say, Russia and some of these other nations that are pushing through things that are anti-West, anti-Israel, at least, if nothing else, it's been sort of like a pressure relief valve for people to have a grievance against another nation and take it up to this higher body, even though they don't really do a lot necessarily with it. Sometimes if you don't have that, I guess you just have to kind of take up the matter yourself as a nation. And then war is kind of, I think, how you solve that or something. So like you say, it hasn't been effective. It's not like it's been this great solution, but there aren't any better ideas, at least man's government has, that I'm aware of. So it's tricky getting rid of something that's not great, but then what comes after it's probably worse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, without an international body where diplomats meet regularly, and no matter what their opinions are, they do meet and there is regular contact. And while most of that probably doesn't get anywhere, in the absence of that, you would have to rely on the individual initiative of each nation to take up those causes with each other. And if you look at the 6,000 years of world history, without the United Nations, that hasn't gone well either. So it's a lose-lose, and I think in the absence of the United Nations, the world would struggle a lot more. That being said, it's not saying the United Nations doesn't need major reform, or I think if the United Nations was reformed, it would probably help a lot, especially in light of Russia and China becoming major world powers. They could eventually dominate the United Nations anyway, in a matter of time. But going back to this issue, I just think it's interesting that with President Trump, he's willing to defy the entire world in order to keep his promises to the American public or to defend his allies in this case. And so that is something that's admirable, but you're also making a lot of enemies. And I think if this behavior continues, we're going to see the United Nations or the United States get cut off a lot more and basically vetoed from anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it has been really interesting these first few days of the Trump presidency. He is actually kind of trying to do what he said he would, which is sort of catching people off guard, I think. Like, what, he's actually going to do it? Because most times there's a lot of promises made and they don't really, you know, they just kind of go by the wayside. But for better or for worse, he does seem like he's trying to stick to his plans. And so it's even interesting looking at the way the media has been covering it. They were really against building a wall between here and Mexico. And now that he's said, well, we're going to do this, and the way they're talking about it in the media is still negative, but I've noticed they're having to change the way they go after it. Like, at first, it seemed they were saying, this is preposterous, this will never happen. They laughed at it. And then the reports I saw today said, well, it still wouldn't solve all the problems. You know, so they're being forced to change what they're saying about it because he is actually trying to go through with things. Some cases that might be great. With this situation with the UN, I think I could appreciate at least where he's coming from in some ways, but like you say, in other ways, maybe it cuts the U.S. off somewhat from other nations. And he seems to have a mentality of, well, too bad, we don't care. But you do have to care on some level.
Yeah, I think that's the danger most people who have protectionist policies have gone through in the last couple hundred years. There always have been a few who have favored that, is that while that looks attractive since the U.S. is a superpower, it is powerful, has world's biggest economy, world's biggest military, it looks like they can stand alone. But in reality, that never works because eventually, just like Caesar, he was the greatest man in Rome, but when everyone turned on him, he couldn't survive. Now, that maybe isn't a perfect metaphor, but it gets to the point where in a international economy, where even if you want to pull out, you can't because you're so interdependent on other countries. If Donald Trump continues with these policies, I don't know how protectionist he will become or if he will at all. But if you follow down this road of America first, eventually you're going to be America last. Because all the other nations are going to say, well, we're not going to trade with you. We'll trade with everyone else. And that's going to have some really bad repercussions for the United States.
Yeah. Really interesting situation there. It's from the UN Dispatch. Senators propose a diplomatic equivalent of cutting off one's nose to spite the face, which is always an interesting expression. Grant, you've got an interesting write-up here as well. This also highlights something the president's doing, where he is coming out against illegal immigration like he said he would. This is from BuzzFeed, and the title is Trump to Publish Weekly List of Crimes Committed by Undocumented Immigrants in Sanctuary Cities. This would be something.
That's right. I don't know. It seems like a good idea because apparently we're having a hard time convincing a lot of liberals, especially, that these illegal immigrants are not actually helping too much, especially when they are kind of are flying under the radar a little bit and it's a little bit harder to keep track of what they're doing. A lot of crimes are committed, hundreds of thousands. And if we actually kept track of it, kept these people accountable, then maybe people would change their minds about the issue.
Well, President Trump has proved himself during the election process, the campaign process, at being very good at circumventing the media and not playing into their game. And so, you know, he has said, look, we're going to get rid of people that are illegal, and we're going to cut off federal funding if you're a sanctuary city. We're not going to, you know, give you federal funds. So there's a bunch of legal wrangling about that. But this really fits in with that. I mean, if a city, a sanctuary city like a San Francisco, if they keep saying, well, you know, we're going to let people be here, and he says, okay, we're just going to publish a report about all the crimes committed there, I think they cave to that pressure eventually. I mean, how could you as the mayor of the city take that heat every single week? So I don't know if that's why he's doing this, but it certainly puts the pressure on people that are trying to skirt the immigration laws.
Yeah, and it seems pretty obvious that if the federal government and a specific city in this country want to go head-to-head, the government is going to win. The federal government will win that, because not only can he publish this weekly list and basically shame the local officials every single week, he could also take away their federal funding, which amounts to multiple billions of dollars, especially in the big states like California, which have a lot of sanctuary cities.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. They were debating this morning on some news programs. And the people, some of the reporters were saying, well, you know, you can't just take away that money and, you know, people will take you to court and there's going to be legal ramifications. But aren't we talking about a policy that's illegal in the first place? Who said you could keep illegal immigrants in your city? Where is that a law? Mm-hmm. I know people are doing it, but is there some law that I'm not aware of? Because it's breaking the law on the books. And so now when there's a threat there, they say, oh, but you got to uphold the law. But they're breaking the law. So I don't understand. Maybe there's more to it than I get, but I don't understand where they'd have any legal high ground there.
And in addition to illegal immigrants breaking the law, is it also okay for local officials to openly defy helping, you know, federal immigration officials and refuse to turn in illegal immigrants when they find them? That is just, it's outrageous, and yet we've seen that become commonplace.
Yeah. Well, I think for quite a few people, I don't know if this will work or if this is a good idea, but I think people find it refreshing that at least something's being done now. There's been so many years of just, winking at the law and trying to take some sort of fake moral high ground. It's nice to see the law be somewhat enforced, at least potentially.
Yeah, I saw a story just earlier where the highest justice in California, I'm not sure what his title is, but he's the highest judge. He vows to fight Trump all the way on this issue in California. But the great irony is this is, some people might construe this as state versus federal government, state rights, which, sure, that you can battle with that. But let's go back just a year ago where we had another battle between federal government and state rights, where the Supreme Court pushed through the gay marriage. And that took away all the states' rights to decide that for themselves. And no one came to the aid of, was it North Carolina, who made the bathroom law.
Right.
No one said, oh, well, that's state rights. You can't break that law. Everyone ganged up on them and forced them to change it, even the NBA.
Right.
So now, and now that the situation is reversed, when you have a government who's trying to enforce a law that already exists on a state government, now everyone's saying, well, the federal government's being overbearing. Well, where was that support for state rights a year ago? It's not a matter of states' rights. It's a matter of just bipartisanship, where you have one political group trying to fight another one. It's actually not about anything noble, in other words.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, and that is the irony of it all, is that now the people that were lawless for the last 8-plus years, now all of a sudden they're concerned about supposed laws or such, just because it's not going in their favor anymore. So I would assume most people could see through that pretty clearly.
Right. Yeah, and those examples you were talking about, those are legitimately states' issues to determine, and yet the federal government still rammed through what they preferred. There are some issues where the states are allowed to make their decisions. Illegal immigration is not one of them. The federal government specifically has charge over that because, for example, if one state like California decides that they specifically alone are going to allow illegal immigrants in, who is stopping them from traveling to the other 49 states that disagree with that, or at least the other 47 that are connected by land directly? So that's why illegal immigration does affect the entire country, and one specific state cannot defy federal law. That's what they're trying to do, and now apparently the liberals are freaking out about it. The executive order that Mr. Trump signed yesterday about this said that the move to publish this weekly report is actually designed to inform people about public safety threats associated with sanctuary cities. So this is an issue where the government is trying to let the people know what is going on. And once again, we have opposition that does not want the people to be aware of the issues. They don't want people to be educated about what is happening. If you're so sure your position is right, why not let the facts be on the table?
Yeah, that's exactly right. If it was all valedictorians and business owners and that coming in, then you'd say, well, let's promote what's happening. But of course, they're not. They don't want to, because it is a high crime issue. And if you even go to buy a house and you're looking at a realtor's website and you click on the house, most of the websites will have a crime report for the area. High crime, low crime, what is it like, schools, because you want to make an educated decision about where you want to live. That's here. Nobody bats an eye at that. It's like, oh, good. You know, this in some ways is kind of the same thing. Like if I'm going to move somewhere, or if I'm thinking about going on vacation, do I go to San Francisco? Well, I'd like to know what's going on there before I go. And this would give me some good insight, maybe.
Right. This bill supposedly is supposed to use this declined detainer outcome report to give its weekly report. And a lot of people are criticizing this because they're saying, well, people who have been denied, access to these different services as illegal immigrants, you don't necessarily know if whenever they have been detained in a center, if there's been probable cause. So now they're saying that illegal immigrants have same rights as U.S. citizens. They should only be allowed to be detained in those centers in the first place if there is a reason to think that they were going to commit a crime already. They're already committing a crime by being here in the first place. We need to start getting back to sanity a little bit.
Absolutely. Probable cause. Yeah, probable cause. You're illegally here. That's probable cause. Yeah, that's, that's some weird reasoning right there. You let the foundational law just ignore that, but now you want to nitpick a couple of little laws you're making on top of it. You came with, when you undercut the whole foundation of it, that's ridiculous.
Right. And the common refrain, the common buzz phrase, if you could call it that, and here we are talking about a BuzzFeed article that has a lot of really angry commenters on it. The buzz phrase we always hear is, well, we're a nation of immigrants. Yeah, they came from Europe, and they all came through pretty much one port in New York, and they were documented, and they were allowed to be here. They didn't just sneak through. If you're sneaking through, then you know you're doing something wrong, and you should be dealt with accordingly.
Yeah, that's a really just silly argument that has been thrown out there. I mean, it sounds nice, if people are yelling it at a protest or something, but completely different situations. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, especially when you consider where people are coming from. the ones coming from Europe, those people were hardworking. They started up businesses by themselves. As soon as they came here, they assimilated into the rest of America, and they started working hard. Now we have people who come here and refuse to even speak the language. They refuse to put America first in their own lives. They're not loyal to America first. So what's the point of having all these people here?
Yeah. And a lot of crime increasing and a lot of other things, because it's like anything in life. I mean, if you're willing to compromise on a law, well, where do you stop? I'll break this law, but not that one. Once you start down that path, it's a pretty rough road usually.
Yeah, and I think this doesn't address the bigger issue, just like the migrant crisis in Europe. You can let as many people as you want in, but it's actually solving the problem of why they're leaving in the first place. And that's we're addressing the effect, not the cause. And so especially for Mexico and the Middle East, in order to make these people's lives better, you need to fix their home country. And that's a much bigger project, much more ambitious, much more difficult. But that's the real solution, especially with U.S.-Mexico. If U.S. really wants to have secure borders, they really need to help rid Mexico of the drug cartels and of all the other violence and everything going on there. And that would be a huge effort, but that would make all of Mexico's people have a better life, not just those living in America.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because if they had a very vibrant economy, if things were going well, if there wasn't the gangs and the drugs and all of those problems, they probably would want us. They already have a country.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's. I think the liberals try to frame the argument like it's some sort of a racial issue, and it's not. They already have a place to be. It may not be great, but that's. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't have everybody move to the nice block in town. Nobody else lives anywhere else. You fix up your own block. And, you know, people from the U.S. love to go down there for vacation, assuming that you don't hit a crime area. If they had a vibrant economy, things are going great, I think it'd be great to have people go back and forth and visit and then go home like you're supposed to.
Well, I have a quote right here at the end, and it's from this supposed university professor who thinks he's an expert on the issue. He said, "It's really a political issue and an opportunity to get more political points rather than actually get at the heart of the real issue." He never says what the heart of the real issue is. What about what's going on in those nations that's making people scramble to get here in the first place?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You can read the rest of that at BuzzFeed. Trump to publish weekly list of crimes committed by undocumented immigrants in sanctuary cities. By the way, there aren't any in Oklahoma, by the way. I saw the map.
Wow.
California's got, they're completely shaded in. We didn't have any here, so maybe nobody wanted to come. I don't know. But that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us here on this Thursday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. Hopefully you have a great rest of your day, and I look forward to talking to you tomorrow. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, Abraham Blondeau, thanks for spending some time with us. 101.3 KPCG.
Listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.